AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Wow, Tuesday already. A debt ceiling deal was struck over the Memorial Day weekend, and the work is already started to round up enough votes to pass the plan. And there were some showers in the western and northern production areas overnight, but what about the eastern belt? How are crops holding up to the abnormally dry conditions?
Live from Fish Taco Tuesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll start with a conversation with Ken Ferry from Crop Tech Consulting. Then it's Pro Farmer OG Jim Wiesmeyer for a deep dive. Right after the news, Karen Bonich from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, welcome the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. How was the weekend, brother? Everything good?
Everything went fantastically smoothly. It was terrific. How about you?
Good, good, good. Yes. Good. Had the family together, took in the Memorial Day ceremony at the Mayflower Cemetery in Oxford Junction, where I grew up and where my parents were laid to rest. And, it was a really, really good weekend. Spent some time on the water, did a little fishing, had, I'd call it minimal success. fishing.
But there was success, though, right?
But there was some success.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, let's focus on that. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I prefer to do. It's kind of like making that last putt, you know, when you're walking off of the golf course. You know, it's, I remember why I like this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, we had minimal success and a fantastic meal after that.
Outstanding.
You know, I mentioned the abnormally dry conditions in the eastern belt. I'll tell you one spot that has gone from exceptional drought into flooding, and that's that Hereford, Texas area. Good Lord.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about you guys all weekend down there dealing with floodwaters at the Hereford feed yards and just some terrible scenes coming out of there, and hopefully – you've got things under control as best you possibly can down there, but just some really, really tough conditions down there that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And we'll find out from Ken Ferry what's going on in the Eastern Belt with some drier than normal conditions developing over there. Perfect. All right, buddy, let's get to the news.
Well, get this, Chip. An agreement on the debt ceiling has reportedly been accomplished. Mm-hmm. President Biden says he feels, quote, very good about it. Asked about the concerns of some Hill Democrats that the deal would lead low income Americans to go hungry, President Biden responded that it was a ridiculous assertion. Hardline conservatives said the debt limit package will not produce the scale of spending cuts they wanted, while liberal Democrats said they were uncomfortable with concessions Biden made on safety net programs. The measure is thought to have enough votes to at least clear the House, Chip.
Yeah, we'll talk with Wiesmeyer about it at the bottom of the hour. But if the groups on the Republican side and the Democrat side, if the groups stick together on this that say that they're going to support it, there's going to be plenty of votes to get it through the House.
Well, Chip, the World Gold Council reports a recent survey shows 24% of central banks intend to increase their gold holdings in 2023. Reasons include higher inflation, geopolitical turmoil, and interest rate concerns. Nothing like having actual gold, Chip.
Yeah, I hear you. It makes that right there makes me want to get a precious metals analyst on the show and talk about what might happen with gold and silver.
Good idea. Well, years of rapid expansion have left the hog sector oversupplied as demand is waning, costs are rising, and new regulations are looming. The Wall Street Journal reports hog farmers are feeling the squeeze, and some are even being driven out of business. The impact is cascading through supply chains as businesses from hog farms to processing plants scale back operations. Chip.
I'm not laughing at the situation. I am laughing at what is going on, because what we needed to do was get the situation on the front page of the Wall Street Journal to get June hogs up $3.40, July hogs up $4.40, August hogs up $4.55. So trying to stick a low in now that we've got it on the cover of the Wall Street Journal.
Right. Well, the Office of Management and Budget has now scheduled 29 meetings related to the final rule from the EPA on the renewable fuel standard levels for 2023 and beyond. EPA had previously committed in court to finalize the RFS levels by June 14. The scheduling of these meetings suggests they are on track to meet that deadline, Chip.
Good deal. Good deal. Yeah. Need to get the RVOs out and into the market.
Well, a new agreement between the United States and 13 other Asia-Pacific nations is aimed at moving supply chains away from dependence on China. The accord was reached in meetings over the weekend of the U.S.-led Indo-Pacific Economic Framework and delivers an early win in a new U.S.-led initiative to strengthen economic ties in a region critical to trade in electronics and consumer goods.
Yeah, I think China is going to get a little defensive over this, but it's a move that most countries understand needs to be made.
Indeed. Well, USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service has partnered with Iowa State University, Michigan State University, American Climate Partners, and the University of Texas at El Paso to launch three regional projects aimed at measuring and monitoring the impact of climate-smart ag practices on soil carbon. The NRCS is investing $8 million in these initiatives. And finally, Russia warned the West on Monday a deal allowing Ukrainian grain to be exported from the Black Sea would cease unless a United Nations agreement aimed at overcoming obstacles to Russian grain and fertilizer exports was fulfilled. Chip.
Huh. Russia doesn't like the deal. Who'd have
thunk it? Fancy that. Fancy
All right.
that.
Thanks, Davis. Karen Bonert. Bonert is editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hey, Chip.
Okay. June is Dairy Month. It's only a couple of days away. What are you looking forward to?
Well, you know what? It's a great way to celebrate, or a great reason to celebrate. I don't know if you realize June Dairy Month has been celebrated for more than eight decades because it was a way to distribute extra milk during the warm months of summer. And in my opinion, it was perfect because dairy, as we know, is packed full of nutrients and vitamins that many American diets are lacking. And I will always tell people, penny for penny, milk is affordable nutrition. You know, an 8-ounce glass of milk costs around 25 cents. You can't go find something else that can compare. And dairy farmers, you know, many of them, Chip, of course, I'm married to one. Their commitment has never wavered. So it's just really admirable that they're always steadfast with purpose, driven to take good care of their cattle, land, and family. You know, that saying that there's that saying out there that says, hey, once in a while you need a lawyer or a doctor, but every single day, three times a day, 365 days a year, we need a farmer. So this is one reason and a big reason to celebrate June Dairy Month. So there's so much to feel good about dairy. It's local, more so than most people think. Most people live within 100 miles of a local dairy farm. So search Facebook or the local news. I'm sure that there's many, many June Dairy Months nearby. I'm kicking off June Dairy Month at the Dairy Fest Gala in Brookings, South Dakota. I'm heading there tomorrow and will be there all week and touring some nearby dairies. So what's your favorite way to celebrate, Chip?
Ice cream.
You can't go wrong, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's something that I try to limit intake of, but a scoop every now and then, that doesn't hurt you. So it's ice cream. Absolutely.
Hey, have an extra scoop on me this month.
Excellent. All right, Karen, thank you so much. That is Karen Bonert. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. We're going to find out what's going on in the Eastern Belt coming up next. Ken Ferry from Crop Tech Consulting.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us on this Tuesday morning. Davis, it was a week ago today where just like out of the clear blue sky, all of a sudden, some strength started to build in the corn market, and there was chatter of this quote-unquote flash drought developing in the eastern Corn Belt.
Was that a week ago already? It seems like only yesterday.
No, it was longer ago than that because remember we tried to get Joe Vaclavich to say drought, and then once he said it.
Yeah, he said he wasn't going to say it, and then he couldn't stop saying it.
Right, and then the floodgates opened up, and
the drought gates, you might
say. The drought gates, I guess. Yeah. All right, let's find out what's going on over there. Ken Ferry is with Crop Tech Consulting, and, of course, he is the Farm Journal agronomist. Ken, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing good, Chip. How about yourself?
Doing real fine, real fine. So tell us about the planting season, Ken. How did it go?
You know, kind of in phases, I guess. Here, Central Illinois, anyway, we just pounded the soybeans in early. And then started in on corn. A lot of corn went in that first week in May, and we ended up with some replant scattered through all of it due to some of these crazy pockets of 3-4 inches of rain that kind of pounded things in. So I think right now we've kind of healed up from the Mother's Day massacre, and a lot of the replanting has been done in the ponds and stuff. But we got corn from knee-high to just coming out of the ground, and we got beans that are flowering as of last Thursday, and some that are just starting to come up. So got a wide range in this crop this year.
Yeah, some diversity. You said you pounded the beans in early. Was that by design, or was that dictated by field conditions?
Mainly by design, as far as guys were ready to strike when the conditions were there, trying to get this pre-solstice flowering underway. And then the conditions were, dry, but, cold and not the best place to stick corn in the ground. But, from the soybean side, we got some fantastic looking early beans, across the state here now that, really look good. And like I said, a 3-5 bean flowering last Thursday, that tells you that we're going to hit this pre-solstice flowering like we wanted with those early planted beans.
Right. How does that trigger, Ken?
It's triggered by night length. So if you think about today, the days are getting longer, the nights shorter until we get to the solstice on that 21st of June, and then it switches. And by night length, our critical photo period triggers when a flower, based on its maturity, should start flowering. Well, a lot of early beans start flowering around that 21st, and your later beans would be that first week in July. But if you can plant them early enough, get them big enough, they can catch the photo period as the days are lengthening and the nights are shortening up. You can actually catch that period on the front end. So instead of like a 3-5 bean flowering the first week in July, here we are, we're not even June and we're flowering already. So you're adding a month to the flowering window.
Yeah.
That's where some of these larger yields come from.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. We keep wondering how we are going to produce enough soybeans on a limited number of acres for all the crush capacity that's coming on. Yield is, we're discovering things on the yield side of soybeans all the time, right?
Yeah. You know, yeah. And we knew early planted beans were where you needed to be for some of the push, but we didn't have the technology to get around sudden depth that we do today. So now with today's seed treatments, it makes us braver sticking those beans in when we know it could be 2-3 weeks before they get out of the ground.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. So give us a status update right now. It sounds like you got that big diversity in crop development out there. But we started hearing about some dry conditions in Illinois and other areas of the Eastern Belt last week. What is the status on that?
It is pretty dry. Some of the later planted corn here in May is pretty small for the amount of stress that's starting to show up now as far as rolling on that corn. And it's crazy, even in those areas where we had 3-4 inches of rain that give us emergence issues. It's dry on top now too, meaning that these temperatures with the low humidity pull this water out pretty quick. But we are going to have some crop root development issues. We call it the, you know, rootless corn syndrome. There's going to be some of this corn as it continues to grow. It's going to get kind of floppy. It's going to lean whatever direction the wind blows it until we can get a rain and get these crown roots established.
the rootless corn, I know what you're talking about there. It does leave you at risk of losing some population, doesn't it?
Yeah, population and you know, the guys that no-till and have trouble sometimes closing the slot, they understand what rootless corn looks like. Guys in conventional till a lot of times don't see it, but those crown roots are not brace roots. Brace roots come above ground and they can grow into air. Crown roots have to grow into moist soil. So if you leave your slot open, they won't grow. And if the soil gets so dry at the surface, they won't grow either. So you might have one set of crown roots and the other four laying there dormant until we do get a rain and the corn keeps growing. Then all of a sudden it starts to, you know, like I said, lean. Different directions. There just isn't enough root mass there to hold it up like it should when it gets to be 6, 8, 10 inches tall in that time frame.
Not really a lot that you can do about it either, is there?
Not much. You know, you might back off of your, you know, your Vanville type products, Marksman products, stuff that has the growth regulators in it because that can mess with the corn in that shape. If you don't have weeds busting through the label, you may pause, you know, with your herbicide just so you don't add any more stress to it. If the slot's open, one other thing that you can do is roll crop cultivator, roll soil around it. But we don't have a lot of row crop cultivators out there anymore or people that know how to run them. But situation, once the corn flips over, then you're kind of stuck. You can't get in there and clean that up. And I don't think it'll be a big issue on a lot of acres, but I think these last acres that went in this really dry soil where guys were having to push dry soil away to get the moisture to plant, there's just not a lot of moisture there, and we need a rain to fix it. One rain probably will fix it.
Okay. What have you got any rain in the forecast?
No. That's our tough spot. We got a 10-day forecast with low humidity, upper 80s, 90s in temperatures, and you know, just no real realistic shot of rain. Hopefully, as they say, they're only good for 3 days. Hopefully this forecast changes. But the forecast doesn't look good in that situation.
Okay.
Now, as a crop, if we're going to be dry, now is probably that window to be dry. We can handle dry weather in this situation compared to what it would be during grain fill or flowering or that type of thing. If we have to pick a window to be dry in, this is probably the safer one, but you feel more comfortable when that crop is, you know, growing like crazy out there and nothing's slowing it down than the pausing that it's taking now to roll up during the day.
Wow. Okay. All right. What do you want guys, what do you want growers doing at this time of the year with the stage of the crop? We've plenty of scouting to do, isn't there?
Yeah, we still got to stay on top of the cutworm. Now, most of our growers are protected with traits or maybe soil insecticide, but if you're not and you're just planted here in May, cutworm pressure has been pretty strong. We've sprayed some of our plots for cutworm and actually seen some cutworm in our soybeans in our cover crop stuff. Anything that's got cover crop habitat for that cutworm, the trap counts are high. We would say for our wheat growers, the armyworm counts have been high. So if you're growing corn in cover, or if you got wheat out there that hasn't, you know, been sprayed with an insecticide, to watch for that armyworm. Those are the two right now from an insect side that are giving us trouble. We are seeing some of last year's herbicides come back and tickle this corn a little bit. And again, that would be here in Illinois due to such a dry June. So some of the seeing a little bit of carryover, slowing some of this corn down too. Not much you can do about it other than recognize it and then try not to stress that corn in the next few weeks. Hopefully it'll push through the herbicide issues and get back to running again.
Outstanding. Okay. Nutrient deficiencies, do we need to be looking for it?
Right now here, we're in what we call the carbon penalty. So you do see some off color in the corn, some yellow in the whorl and yellow in it from a nitrogen deficiency. Not much you can do about it today, but you can think about how you set your 4Rs up to manage around that corn slowing down some for the future.
Gotcha. Ken, thank you, buddy. We really appreciate your time this morning. Let's talk again soon.
You bet.
All right. Ken Ferry, Crop Tech Consulting and Farm Journal agronomist. Jim Wiesmeyer next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, unless you are a livestock trader, it looks like it's a general risk-off day. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, coming out of the holiday weekend here, Chip, just lack of buyer interest in corn held up relatively well during overnight trade. Late in the session, it saw its losses extended. But boy, the heavy selling in soybeans and across the soy complex, for that matter, and the wheat market has pulled the corn market lower as well. And so we're seeing double-digit losses across most of the corn, soybean, and wheat markets here to kick off the week.
Yeah, and it's... It's a sizable sell-off in that HRW market in particular, more than 30 cents lower in the nearby contracts. Soybean futures are trading about 30 cents lower, and we've got corn in that 15 to 17 cent lower, except for the July contract, which is only 8 cents lower. The trouble in the lean hog market hit the front page of the Wall Street Journal, and I guess that's all it took, huh, Brian?
Yeah, you know, it's just been really hammered recently, and we're seeing a strong wave of corrective buying this morning. Traders are trying to narrow up those discounts. Yes, discounts, unusual for this time of year, but the discounts that the futures hold to the cash index. The cash index is down today, so that ends the recent string, but still the futures are trading below the cash, unusually there. On the cattle side of things, new contract highs in the live cattle market, on support from last week's strength in the cash market, and expectations that the cash market will firm again this week, and then feeder supported by the weakness in the corn market.
Absolutely. All right, Brian, thank you so much. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis is here as well, and let's welcome in Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Chip. We're all just right. waiting for the next shoes to fall on the debt limit package.
Right, right. You know, last week when we were making plans for Tuesday, this was an easy one to try to get you on the show on Tuesday morning, because we knew that it was either going to be let's get the details of the debt ceiling package, or if it went the other way, what's next? How do we get this problem solved? But there is a deal. Tell us about, give us a couple of, an overview of the deal.
Well, it's a suspension of the debt limit. Republicans like to suspend rather than actually increase. So that'll take us till January 1, 2025, Chip, and actually later, because they can do their extraordinary aspects again. That's one thing. Then there were a series of spending caps for two fiscal years, not as draconian as some people wanted, but at least they're spending caps. I think one of the more interesting ones is appropriations. Leaders in Congress are given an incentive to pass annual spending bills and not to sidestep those new budget caps, because if they do, another 1% spending cut would be enforced if they aren't passed by the end of the calendar year. Okay. Now, there's a clawback on COVID of around $28 billion. And the IRS, it looks like total over the next few years, $1.4 billion initially, and then $10 billion for the next two fiscal years that lawmakers can spread around spending for other areas. Work requirements. The Republicans got what they wanted for certain portions of food stamp recipients. So let's go bottom line. Oh, there's an environmental permitting that Joe Manchin's going to like Manchin. For West Virginia, because it includes the Mountain Valley Pipeline. Yep. Bottom line, this is what a compromise looks like, Chip. If you get usually visceral differences between the two political parties when you have grown-ups in the room, this time negotiators for the White House and House Speaker McCarthy had his negotiators. Yes, it's not perfect, but I'm telling you, if this thing eventually is passed by the end of this week, this could be the template they can use for other things to get through a very unwieldy Congress.
Okay. I want to talk about that more coming up here in just a little bit. Who is claiming victory here the most? Is it McCarthy or is it President Biden?
Well, McCarthy initially did, and I think he's got a lot to claim. Now, of course, his far hardline conservatives are going to vote no. So-called progressive, Democrats on the liberal side are wailing, but there's a lot of room in the middle, Chip. Mm-hmm. So bottom line, I think it's a win for both. I do think that President Biden did lose a big one in his failed initial goal was not to negotiate this outside of the debt limit increase. Well, he failed. But yet he gave in areas that some Democrats are surprised he gave in, which seems to be a victory, if you will, for McCarthy. But the White House didn't get those draconian cuts, their term, that the Republicans House passed bill wanted to put on the Democrats. So there's the win from the on the White House side.
Okay, you mentioned $10 billion of COVID spending that was pulled back. That came from the IRS plan to hire the new auditors?
The $1.4 billion initially is an actual cut. in the IRS.
Okay.
Then they have another $20 billion over two fiscal years from the $80 billion IRS received through the Inflation Reduction Act. Right. But that's over two fiscal years. And that's where they can spread. It's not really cuts, Chip. It's okay. It's repurposing, I'd say, that $20 billion. And that's going to appease some of the Democrats who see it initial cuts in some programs. Well, they can put a portion of that $10 billion each fiscal year to plug some holes.
Okay. Okay. The work requirements on SNAP, they made it through. There is a step up in the worker requirements, correct?
Yes, a gradual. I think it's a 3-year increase from the current 49 aged up to 54 years. The work requirements would apply. But there are some exemptions that the White House got in. And again, that's a partial victory for them as well in this. It exempts veterans, the homeless, and those recently in foster care. And then the deal would also cut the number of annual exemptions from work requirements that states can grant. I know this is good. The House Ag Committee was looking at that, from 12% of SNAP beneficiaries to 8%. So that's a victory on the Republican side.
Interesting. Okay. What is next? It's got to get through the Rules Committee first, correct?
The key, yes, absolutely. The key is around 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern time today, there'll be a House Rules Committee consideration. And that's where I don't want to get too wonky, but there's three key arch conservative members of McCarthy's party. Now, two of them have already said they're going to vote no. Representative Massey from Kentucky has said in the past he would not use his position on the Rules Committee to stop a bill from getting a debate on the House floor. If it can get out of the House Rules Committee, and there may have to be some changes, by the way, we'll have to see if McCarthy has to do some changes. And there's some volatility in that. But if it gets through the House Rules Committee, it's a done deal, Chip, and also a done deal in the Senate. The votes are there in the Senate already.
Now, tell me why you're so confident that it's a done deal.
Well, it's a done deal in the Senate because I think I know the votes are there. In the House, it'll be a done deal if it can get through the rules, because McCarthy would not have, as Speaker, would not have had his negotiators agree to the final framework agreement with the White House unless they thought they had the necessary numbers of House Republican votes, let's say 140 to 150, along with 100 or so Democrat votes. You need 218. Do the math. It's there. And even President Biden said he thought that this would be a goal, because he thought too, why would McCarthy sign off on this if he didn't think the total of his membership, his caucus, right, if you will, would not go along.
Right. You said 100 Democrats to support the bill. Is that must be from the moderate caucus, a relatively new caucus? Is that right?
Most of them are not in the progressive wing of the party.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Okay. Excellent.
And the 140 or so on the Republican side would be, what you would call a moderate to conservative Republicans, but not a hardline conservative.
Gotcha. You mentioned it early in this conversation that it showed us that actual negotiation can take place and that this could be a template for tackling some other issues going forward. Does the farm bill fall into that other issues?
Absolutely. I think if this thing passes, because you will have had the worker requirement sensitive issue out of the farm bill, new farm bill, then you have to up the odds that you're going to have a new farm bill by early 2024, Chip. It could yet take into early 2024, but I think it does increase it. Absolutely. But it also shows, remember at the first part of the year, I was more upbeat on maybe a compromise immigration reform yes. bill and border yes. security bill. This is what I thought they would do. Now, you can still come back to that, even though that's a very contentious issue going into 2024 elections. But here's the template. If you want to get an agreement done, pick negotiators in the part like Biden, I think, did quite well. The OMB person and some others, they did a good job negotiating. They got the job done. On the Republican side, the thorny issues, McCarthy picked two good negotiators that got an agreement. And I think the same thing could happen under immigration reform, although most people would say I'm incorrect on that.
You know, it. On one hand, I'm glad that they found a method. On the other hand, I'm still disappointed that they can't sit in the room and do their own negotiating. Or is this typically how it gets done?
Well, your staff usually and other people usually do the work. I think behind the scenes, this is how it's done, Chip. Because okay. let's face it, Biden has a lot of other issues, and this is why you delegate. This is why you have to have faith in your negotiators, and he had absolute faith. McCarthy as well. They're doing him a good steed in this one because you compromise, but not too much at both ends.
Interesting. Okay. We've got some other issues that we need to talk about with Jim. Number one on the list is what's happening in Ukraine, because my goodness, it looks like a counteroffensive has been launched by Ukraine in Russia, and not just military targets there in Russia. We'll talk about that next here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. We are in the middle of a conversation with Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, getting an update on some of the things that happened over the three-day weekend. Jim, let's start with what's happening in the conflict, the war between Russia and Ukraine. What's the latest?
Well, Russia over the weekend set it down 8 drones aimed at Moscow. Now, that's the biggest attack on the capital since Russia invaded Ukraine February 24th over a year ago. And the defense ministry in Russia, of course, blamed Kyiv, but they have not commented. And I think they're probably a week away, Ukraine, from their counter-offensive. And this is why Russia launched a third round of strikes in 24 hours on Kyiv, Ukraine's capital. And it was a rare daytime attack on Monday, Chip. So I think this is bullets time and weapons time at both ends.
Okay. It sounds like some civilians in Russia were targeted. Is that how you were?
I don't have the full confirmation, but I'm telling you, this is going to be big because it's the first solid evidence that whoever sent those drones in that surfacing in Russia, and that gets the populace more than a little anxious, Jeff.
What is the status of Putin? You know, we know what it is in most countries around the world, but what about in Russia?
Don't know. I don't have enough on that, okay, other than he's a master at protecting himself, yeah, and he has very few confidants. I think that can hurt him as well, because they're just yes man. But that's all I'll say. Now, Russia is starting to plow money back into black market dollars and filling their bank accounts abroad. And that's because they're worried about the continued drag out of this war, their economic anxiety. So I think that's another indication this thing's going to go on, Jim.
Okay. Okay. We've been talking a lot about the Supreme Court decision on Prop 12. And now Massachusetts, with its Q3, is starting to prepare for some similar action, right?
When I got into this over the weekend, the Attorney General's office said any petition for a rehearing on that California law would need to be filed by June the 5th, Chip. And if none is made, then the High Court in Massachusetts, that is, will issue its final judgment the week of June the 12th. That would then trigger a 30-day deadline of July 12th for the pork regulations to go into effect in Massachusetts. So we're seeing the repercussions of other states joined California. And I saw over the weekend, I think Sean Haney from Canada told us 6% of the U.S. pork currently meets the new standards, Massachusetts and California. Now, the Massachusetts press is saying only 4%. So there you go, from 4% to 6%.
Okay. Ups the need for some sort of a legislative fix on this, doesn't it?
This is a sensitive getting it through the U.S. Congress, as I've said, because how many lawmakers from California will go against their state to get it through, say, the Senate, where you would need 60, and then on the House side? I just think, while not impossible, it's not going to be as easy as some people think.
Okay. We talked about this with Brian Grady at the bottom of the hour. The woes of the hog market make the front page of the Wall Street Journal, and we've got sharply higher trade today. I don't know if that's coincidence or not, Jim.
Well, Jim Long is president and CEO of Genesis Inc., and he's been pretty accurate over the last few years on the hog market from an industry perspective. And he just says the sow liquidation, not only in the U.S., but around the world, is breathtaking. He said the longer losses continue, the greater the liquidation. He believes at this point at least 300,000 sows of liquidation have been in motion, Chip, in this country, Canada, Mexico combined. And every week losses continue at the current level. They expect to add another 15,000 to 20,000 more sows a week to that 300,000 mark. Bottom line, you talk about pain going on. And then you also have to do the rule of thumb. 300,000 sows gone means 3 million empty finishing spaces. So the industry is going through a major correction here.
Yeah. Yeah. There is no doubt about it. We've got some important data coming from on the economy coming at the end of the week.
Employment report. We're going to see that'll probably be a key judgment on whether or not the Fed does increase rates another 25 basis points at the June 13th FOMC meeting. I think we'll go a long ways to see that, Chip. But, you know, from the confidence surveys and things like that that came out today, very low, it feels like a recession. It may not be an official recession, but it's certainly starting to feel like one.
Okay, status of the renewable volume obligations coming from EPA, the finals.
OMB continues to add groups, Soybean Association, I think on June 1, and a number of others, that they're in line to actually meet their court order to announce 2023 and later mandated levels, Chip, by June 14th. So I think they're finally going to get some announcements on time. And let's hope that that's a higher mandate for biodiesel and renewable diesel, because okay, that's the expectation.
Okay, there's actually, give me 20 seconds on the deal between the U.S. and 13 other Asian Pacific nations.
Well, any deal on trade policy is a step in the right direction, and it's really aimed at China. That's your bottom line right there. It finally, we're going to see some progress coming out of the White House on the Biden trade policy.
Fantastic. Jim, great update. Thank you so much. We'll talk with you again later.
Okay.
All right. That is Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Thank you so much for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. Brian Doherty, Total Farm Marketing. And tomorrow morning, we've got a farmer forum and former House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson.